It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Welcome aboard. We are back to another live program. Well, not back to. I mean, last night was live, too. Well, we've got another live program is what we've got. We also apparently have some late-blooming pollen, so my apologies for that pregnant pause there. It is the 12th day of September 2017. We have passed our national grief holiday, and now we will go on with the business of heading into autumn. 2 minutes past the hour. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that's where you go if you'd like to be part of the madcap, merry, zany, wacky, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Just click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump right in. You will, of course, be immediately met by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a spacing guild master, has not folded space today to become man cave. Also there, early on, on time to the party, actually, Jug of Punch and Kid Mark. Welcome and greetings to you both, and they'll all be happy to greet you, including me. I'm there, too, when you stop on by. Put your boots up on the rail, and you know the drill. Exactly. Talk across the back fence. It's what the idea of conversation radio really is all about. Of course, you will also find there the tab called Contribute. That's how we keep this program on the air. Thanks going out immediately at the top of the program to our subscribers. Thank you to Christopher. Thank you very kindly to Angelica. Thank you very much, Angelica in Oregon. Thank you. Thank you goes out as well to Mark in Minnesota. Thank you, Mark. Thank you to Gary in New York. Thank you, Gary. And, of course, thank you to Paul in California. Thank you one and all to our subscribers. On nights when we don't make the fundraising goal, they take a lot of the sting out of that. Now, I'm going to go ahead and say what I've been saying. One, I wish there was some way that I could just do the program and not have to mention fundraising. Because I know it bothers you and it bothers me. Probably bothers me more than it bothers you. But until such time as we start getting the great big George Soros money checks or the one from Leo DiCaprio or George Clooney or Rob Reiner or Barbara Streisand or Whoopi Goldberg or whomever, I care not, this is how we're going to have to go. But then again, that's how it always works, isn't it? Anything that the working class wants, the working class has to do for its damned well for itself. Seems like that's sort of the story of America, isn't it? But, you know, there's a trade-out. You don't have to put up with any ads. You don't have to put up with any... Wait a minute. This evening is brought to you by Hot Shot Jicama. Have you tried Hot Shot Jicama from Horn Labs? That's right. Hot Shot Jicama has the nutritional power of entire mountains of jicama slaw in a handful of tiny capsules. If you buy a 30-day supply of Hot Shot Jicama now for only $29.95, we will send you another bottle from Horn Labs of Hot Shot Jicama for only $29.95 more. And if you include a third $29.95, we'll send you a third bottle of Hot Shot Jicama, and you'll be well set for all your jicama nutritional needs. Remember, to this day, I can't stand jicama. And the only way I can get my jicama nutritional needs is through Hot Shot Jicama capsules from Horn Labs. Hot Shot Jicama, a product that doesn't really exist. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Labor Man will wander by. There's Labor Man now. And there's the obligatory question. Sparky asking, what the f*** is jicama? It's spelled J-I-C-A-M-A, and I think it's some sort of root crop that comes out of Mexico and Central America, and apparently it makes great slaw. I don't really know, but I gotta come up with a vegetable every night. So last night it was quixotic quinoa, and tonight it's Hot Shot Jicama. Yes, there's Labor Man now. Labor Man always wants to know, but Bob, does it help with the boners? It absolutely helps with the boners. In fact, if you take your Hot Shot Jicama every day, Labor Man, you'll be suave and deboner. Hot Shot Jicama, only from Horn Labs. But anyway, we run by listener contributions. Thank you very kindly to Chris for taking a bite out of the throwing a little shovel full of dirt into the hole, because we're in one. We are at this point in time $425 is the fundraising goal for the evening. $425. Let's see, that'd be 10 at $42.50, or 42 and a half people at $10. You know what? We'll round down that half a person, because that would have to hurt. We'll just say 42 people at $10. But we've got an ongoing subscription campaign going on over at Patreon, patreon.com/Bob Kincaid. And remember, everybody who subscribes gets bumper stickers, or a bumper sticker, or both bumper stickers if you kick in for $20 a month. Ron in the frozen tomorrow north. Horn Labs has already introduced Righteous Rutabaga. Righteous Rutabaga was the first nutritional supplement to be introduced by Horn Labs. And in point of fact, you know, to this day, I still can't stand rutabagas. And the only way I can get the nutritional value of a rutabaga in my diet is with Righteous Rutabaga, only from Horn Labs. It would sure be nice to crawl out of the hole, because there's a ton of bills to be paid. And, well, this is how we do it. And, you know, when you think about it, it's not that bad a deal. Mark Twain, Sam Clemens, operated on this model, too. He sold his books by subscription. And so it's actually as old or older a model than the capitalist models that we've come to know in the modern age. Thank you very kindly to Charlene. Thank you, Charlene, for taking a bite out. Wow, that was a big bite. So we're down to $375 to go in fundraising this evening. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you so very, very, very much for helping to make the program available to everybody who wants to listen to it. It's all voluntary. All voluntary. So, and of course, if you prefer the United States Postal Service, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. All around great guy and midweek utility chat room moderator Steve from Georgistan is not in the room this evening. I hope he didn't lose power, but I suspect perhaps he did, or else he's just a little late to the party. I just wanted to note his absence. But don't worry, we're not going to put it on his permanent record. As far as Hotshot Jicama is concerned, Steve in New York wants to know, but do they have GMOs, and will they give me gas? I have really bad irritable bowel syndrome. It will cure your irritable bowel syndrome, Steve from New York. There's nothing gassy at all about Hotshot Jicama. In fact, we removed all the gas molecules along at the same time that we removed all the genetically modified organisms from them. These are Hotshot Jicama is made only from the purest organic, free-range, cruelty-free, vegan-friendly jicama farms. Okay? Yeah. It is Titanic Tuesday. The 12th day of September 2017 falls on a Tuesday, making it Titanic Tuesday. You may recall, of course, that Titanic Tuesday takes its name from something that happened many, many, many years ago in the dim, dark mists of time when our buddy Jim tuned in local right-wing radio to hear the local monotone take a call from one of his followers who said, Steve, I've done been down in the mines a whole lot of years now, and sometimes I'd look up with my lamp and I'd see ferns and daisies from years gone by, and sometimes I seen seashells. Why was they seashells down there inside the rocks in West Virginia, Steve? Because we ain't nowhere near the beach. To which Steve, magnificent monotone. I mean, as monotones go, Steve was a Pavarotti. He was a Pavarotti of monotones, and he replied, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Yes. Still no word whatsoever on the movement of the Titanic fillet of sole bone remover. No word whatsoever. So on Titanic Tuesday, we celebrate manifestations of Titanic intellect, usually Titanic right-wing intellect. But I have an early nominee. Because I was out running around today, and I had the radio tuned to National Petroleum Radio, and I heard Terry Gross with her interview program. Terry worked today, and she was interviewing Katie Turr, T-U-R, Katie Turr, a reporter for NBC News, who was, in fact, the first reporter to full-time cover the candidacy of one Donald J. Trump. And she's got a memoir out now called Unbelievable. Free plug there, Katie. You're welcome. But in the course of her conversation with Terry Gross, as if it was some sort of noble thing, she proudly announced that she doesn't vote. And I was driving, so I had no furniture to kick. And she delivered this attempted a justification for it by saying that it's her job, by God, to be objective, and that if she voted or preferred any candidate, it would make clear that her objectivity was in question, because then she would have a dog in the hunt, and she would feel like she was advocating instead of reporting. This is, of course, specious bullshit. I admire her reporting, I like her reporting, but that's just some sort of self-congratulatory crap right there is what that is. I mean, she's a member of the Fourth Estate. She's there to report facts. And the tired old notion of journalistic objectivity has about has about run its race. It's seen its day in the sun, and I think most of us recognize now that there's really no such thing as objective journalism. Because, you know, the fact of the matter is, as Jim Hightower once noted, the only thing in the middle of the road are dead possums and armadillos. Randy in PA reminds me that the late George Carlin also claimed he didn't vote. George Carlin didn't vote because he deemed himself part of, deemed the entire system corrupt and pointless and yada, 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 and whatever. But the justification offered up by Katie Turr was just sort of pitiable. I mean, you like that whole First Amendment thingy that protects you there, Katie, right? Well, back in November, there was a choice between somebody who valued the First Amendment and somebody who didn't. And there's really the idea that one would be objective in as existential a choice as took place in November is a little bit specious, to say the least. So being a journalist and not voting doesn't convey, at least to me, any special status, especially on the presidential level. Now, I don't know. Maybe you can make a better case for it down at, say, like the county commission level. But up on the presidential level, no, that's just crap. So it just. And I don't know that she's a right-winger, so, I mean, who can tell? She's that objective. But just an early nomination for that. But we've got a whole bunch of other stuff that will fit the Titanic Tuesday mold this evening, without a doubt. We do. And because we've been sort of lost in hurricane land lately, I thought maybe we might want to turn our focus to some things that have maybe missed our, not quite blipped on our radar in the last few days. I'd like to start with with a clip from a jackass from America's most wealthy, politically connected domestic terror organization. The NRA has massive organization. They've got both 501c4 and 501c3 operations. Part of it's a tax dodge. Part of it isn't. They routinely excoriate candidates and question the patriotism of anybody that doesn't walk around with a mouthful of bullets and guns on both hips and one in the boot and one down the crack of their ass and what have you. And they've got this little online TV thing that they do. And they've got this angry white dude by the name of Grant Stinchfield. Couldn't make that up. Thank you, Goddess of Irony. Thank you. Grant Stinchfield. And he's furious at journalism. In particular, and you'll hear it in a minute, he went off on an article in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution had to do with open carry laws and open carry on college campuses. And along the way, go figure, I mean, these little snowflakes are so precious, so darling, so tender, that a mere word can send them into paroxysms of righteous indignation and fury. And such was the case with Grant Stinchfield. Sounds like a farm covered in poop, doesn't it? Grant Stinchfield got all upset over the fact that this article described firearms as, wait for it, weapons. Weapons. And of course, I guess you can make an argument that maybe weapons is the wrong word. Agnes mentioned a story to me, and it's one of those that kind of makes you go, huh? It came out of Missouri, and there was a photograph attached to it of the subject of the story. And she was, let's just say she kind of looked like you would expect the picture to look of a woman who was busted trying to smuggle a handgun tucked away in, her vagina. No, really. That was the story. So maybe that was what Grant Stinchfield was thinking about when he objected to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution referring to freedom protectors as weapons. Maybe Grant Stinchfield thinks of them more in the way of marital aids. Possible? I don't know. So let's check in, shall we, with the anger, the righteous Second Amendment patriotic fury of Grant Stinchfield, who's angry because a newspaper referred to firearms not as marital aids, but as weapons.
Well, hi there, folks. Welcome to the program. When it comes to media bias, it is often the little things that matter most. Seemingly innocuous phrases designed to sway your opinion. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution recently wrote an article about campus carry taking effect in Georgia and the controversy surrounding it, but it's their use of the word weapon that has me bewildered.
Yep, he's Grant Stinchfield, proud protector of Second Amendment freedom protecting, protector carrying rights, and he's baffled by the use of the word weapon to describe a firearm.
Porter uses, quote, weapons in place of firearms or guns so many times, it just becomes bizarre. Here, fears of gun owners getting drunk and firing their weapons. I firmly believe she uses the phrase weapons over firearms in an effort to scare the uninformed.
See, there he goes. He's believing. He's not knowing. He didn't bother to reach out to the reporter and say, gee, why did you use the word weapons? Or maybe even say, hey, did you use firearms and guns and weapons? And maybe your editor blue penciled it and he's the guilty party who used the terrifying word weapons over, say, an innocuous series of words like handheld engines of grim fucking death. Wait, they don't print the F word in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, but you get my meaning.
But then I realized Georgia calls their concealed carry permits a, quote, weapons carry license. I don't like that name at all.
I doesn't like it because, well, the only thing you should be able to concealed carry in Georgia, and especially according to the NRA, is, you know, a firearm, a freedom protector. You know, maybe that carries 19 rounds of 9mm ammunition, just like the one that Thomas Jefferson done had, right? Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't take long for this program to descend into the gutter. Thank you, Ron, in the soon-to-be-frozen North, with regard to the woman in Missouri caught with a pistol in her... we're not going to be alliterative, a pistol in her vagina. He remarks, whole new definition for gonna bang her real good. It didn't take long, did it? Let's see. 27 minutes past the hour, and we're already, right, natural. Mm-hmm. Grant Stinchfield doesn't like the word weapon, because weapon is scary. It's scarier than deadly fucking firearms
in an effort to scare the uninformed. But then I realized Georgia calls their concealed carry permits a, quote, weapons carry license. I don't like that name at all. To me, the military carries weapons. Guns carry for offensive purposes. I carry a firearm, a tool used for self-defense. To me...
Oh, shut the f*** up, Grant. There is no such distinction in the definition of weapon. Let's just double check, shall we? Oh, no, better add definition to that, because I get all kinds of ads for firearms if I just put weapon in, oddly enough. That might tell us something. Weapon. A thing designed or used for inflicting bodily harm or physical damage. As Earther notes, Ma, the state of Georgia's calling guns weapons. Tell them to stop. I don't like that term, Ma. Thank you, Earther. Thank you kindly. So that's what you get, just, you know, a thing designed or used for inflicting bodily harm or physical damage. Let's check it out with the folks over at Merriam-Webster. Weapon. One, something such as a club, knife, or gun used to injure, defeat, or destroy. Two, a means of contending against another. First known use before the 12th century. Well, clearly then, It should not be used in regard to firearms because firearms weren't around before the 12th century or even immediately thereafter. Oh, these people are pathetic. Well, wrap it up there, Grant, would you, buddy? Please?
It is actually a very important distinction. By Georgia, a state rich in firearms history, using the term weapons in an official capacity, it hurts the perception of law-abiding gun ownership. The media already has it out for us. Why give them more ammunition?
Yeah, so now the National Republican Rifle Association, America's most well-connected, politically astute, politically powerful, wealthy domestic terror organization, is going to go to war against the word weapon. So I guess, I don't know, are legislatures all over the United States going to have to reconvene and just to make the NRA happy, edit all their bills to say, let's say, how about assault with a deadly... what? Assault with a deadly banana. Assault with a deadly quince. We all know we mean weapon, but if we say weapon, the people over at the NRA might come and kill us because, you know, NRA. So we'll have to be careful in our usage of the word weapon. So Sunday evening there was a quince problem in the Dallas suburb of Plano, Texas. Let this be a warning to you. Nah, don't let this be a warning to you. This is just the NRA's little roulette wheel spinning and spinning and round and round she goes. Place your bets, ladies and gentlemen. Le jour en fait. No more bets. Le jour en fait. And the wheel stops on Plano, Texas, where there was a football watching party going on for the first games of the new NFL season. Yep. Debbie Lane told WFAA television that her daughter, Meredith Lane, owned the home where the NFL watching party was going on. And she said she was a cook and quite a fine one, and she loved hosting friends and families. And she had about, eight other people there at her house. They were first going to watch the Atlanta game because she was an Atlanta native. You know, Georgia, where Grant Stinchfield is so upset that they call guns weapons. And then they were going to go after that. They were going to watch the Dallas Cowboys game. One of Meredith Lane's neighbors, Stacy Glover, in an interview with the Dallas Morning News, said it looked like it was a good party. It got started early in the afternoon. She saw people laughing. They were grilling outside. You know, that's the kind of thing, you know, you cook your food outside over fire. You know, it's football season. Autumn's coming. It's a thing. And around 8 p.m., though, she said she heard shots fired. Although I'm certain if you were to ask Grant Stinchfield, they were not fired by a weapon, but by a firearm or a fucking engine of death. No, he doesn't like that one. No, they can't call it that. They might come and shoot me. And it was brutal. Nine people including the shooter. 9 people died that evening in Plano, Texas. It was apparently the worst mass killing in Plano, Texas history. I haven't watched that much for-profit media today. Have we found time for this story yet in between flyover photos of the hurricane damage? Have we? Just curious. Somebody called in a shots fired to the PD, and the cop who showed up confronted the shooter, opened fire, killed him. Inside the house, 9 gunshot victims were found. 7 were dead. 2 were taken to the hospital. So if you do the math, and we understand that ciphering is not my long suit, this particular NRA member, because he's Texas, I'm sure he was an NRA member, was quite effective in the use of his firearm. Maybe he'd had some NRA-approved handgun training classes. One never knows. It's purely speculation. Well, yeah, I know. Ron in the communist North. You know, there's a reason that maple leaf is red, damn it. It says, Bob et al. Ooh, you're treading pretty damn close to Ron and Raleigh's gimmick. Bob et al. Obviously, now is not the time to be talking about gun control or guns. You know, if they don't like the word weapons, maybe the word guns are next. You know, because then you can have gun control. Jesus. Meredith Lane had recently gone through a divorce after 6 years of marriage. The Texas Rangers, the law enforcement unit, not the baseball team, are investigating the shooting because it was officer involved. And they're also assisting the Plano police with the overall homicide investigation. And they're not sure why the shooting took place. We do know who the shooter was. His name was Spencer Height, Hight. He was killed by police after he had very effectively discharged his weapon, into the bodies of 9 human beings, including his ex-wife, Meredith, who in the news account I'm looking at here is referred to as being estranged. Really? Estranged? How about just divorced? Meredith Lane was 27 years old. She and her husband had separated in the spring. But remember, friends, we have to just learn to accept incidents like this. Because if we don't, we won't have freedom. And let's also remember that Mr. Height, we can probably make a pretty good guess, was a lawful gun owner until he began using his weapon, tool for self-defense, and destroyed 8 other lives in addition to his own. Our buddy Reverbo, the human boy, reminds me, let's not forget the encouragement about a half a case of Mickey's malt liquor or similar alternative can provide to plans like this. Oh, yeah. The thing is, the party was not a problem. This isn't one of those, you know, mercifully, where somebody doesn't like the music that somebody else is playing next door, and they call the cops, and the cops show up and shoot seven people. No. This was just a little football-watching party, some hamburgers, some brats, some hot dogs. It's Texas. Maybe there was brisket involved. Who knows? And everybody was having a good time until the ex-husband showed up and decided to show everybody what a patriotic American he was by murdering his defenseless, unarmed ex-wife. Once again, it might bear mentioning that domestic violence, and as this is further investigated, we might find some of that, that domestic violence is a pretty good indicator of the propensity for a person to go ahead and commit horrible crimes with bananas, or, tools designed for self-defense. You take a run at it, Asa. Asa says, allow me, Bob. So, in other words, one single gunned-up NRA member is one-seventh as deadly as a once-in-500-years hurricane with all of God's fury behind it? Damn. Well, that's an interesting statistical comparison there. One-seventh. But, yeah, I think the math works there. Under the subject line, weapon, Jim asks, can one say, is that a pistol in your pocket, or are you just glad to see me? No levity intended. No, I think, well, if the person you're talking about is white and male and is a member of the National Republican Rifle Association, America's wealthiest, most politically well-connected domestic terror organization, you have to say, is that a tool designed for self-defense in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me? Please make a note of it. Yep. Yep, Ron. Up there where they're a little bit saner with their firearms, Ron points out, we are become as gods. Yep. So that was Plano, Texas. Let's just sort of wander over to Nash, Vegas. Mm-hmm. Where a woman named Katie Quackenbush. Please, no Marx Brothers movies jokes. Where a 26-year-old woman by the name of Katie Quackenbush parked her Porsche SUV near to where a homeless man was trying to sleep. I tell you what, just those bare facts, and you already know which way this story's going to go, don't you? Gerald Melton, 54 years old, homeless, asked young Katie Quackenbush with her Porsche to please move it away from him because her exhaust fumes and loud music were, well, keeping him from getting any sleep out on the streets. Katie Quackenbush then began screaming at him. He began screaming at her. And that's when Katie Quackenbush got out of her Porsche and walked over and shot Gerald Melton twice in the guts. Then, according to police, Katie Quackenbush jumped back into her Porsche and drove away from the scene, which she had previously been unwilling to do as long as it was a matter of making life at all tolerable for some homeless dude. Yep. The defense, the affluenza defense, is already being set up. Daddy is a lawyer down in Texas by the name of Jesse Quackenbush. After she was arrested, he said that Gerald Melton was threatening to kill her shortly before she decided to get out of the car and fire her weapon at him. One wonders how he was going to kill her, being as how she was inside the Porsche with the doors locked and the windows up, and I don't know, was he going to use his homeless mind meld to drive her to suicide inside the car there? I got nothing. Jesse Quackenbush, Precious Lumpkin Quackenbush's pappy, said, she didn't try and kill this guy. She had no intention of killing him. She didn't know that she hit him. She did say she closed her eyes when she shot both times, but they were warnings, and she thought she pointed away from him. Well, all I can say is thank God she wasn't transporting the firearm in her. No. Don't try to make that connection, Bob. That's just too much. She closed her eyes when she shot. Huh. That changes everything. No, it really doesn't. It really doesn't change anything at all. And they were warning shots. You know what? When you shoot somebody twice in the guts, I'd say you've warned them pretty damn well, to the point of warning them that their lives may be pretty near to ending. Well, she fled and she left him to die. No, I'm not going to use Johnny Cash for the bumper out of this segment. Well, I shot a man in Nashville just to watch him die. Nah, it doesn't work with a 26-year-old little blonde girl with nerd glasses and a Porsche. No, it doesn't. She's scheduled to appear in court on October 6th. She was only charged with attempted murder, so it's not going to be that big a deal. Why she was not charged with, negligent or... No, it wasn't negligent, was it? It was the intentional discharge of a firearm. Oh, never mind. I don't know what the law is down there in Tennessee. All right, maybe... You know what? It may be okay in Tennessee to just line homeless people up against a wall and machine gun them, for all I know. Because, you know, freedom. Right? Not a lot of word on Gerald Melton, 54. The Tennessean article reports only that he was critically injured. Well, I'll say. The shooting apparently happened is somewhere downtownish, around 901 19th Avenue South near Music Row. He was disturbed by exhaust fumes and loud music, as noted. Guess what kind of bond you get if you gut shoot a homeless guy there in downtown Nashville and you're a cutish 26-year-old blonde girl with a Porsche and nerd glasses? Not once, but twice, gut shot. Why, you get a $25,000 bond, which means for the low, low Kmart price of $2,500 cash, a bail bondsman will come and get you out of the pokey. Really, $25,000 for gut shooting a homeless guy twice? Mr. Melton is said by Ms. Quackenbush's pappy to have made explicit and sexist remarks at Quackenbush. Okay, so let's be clear. The 54-year-old guy deserved to be shot twice in the guts. He comes up to their window and starts screaming in their window various threats and something about turning their music down and that he couldn't sleep. After the man walked away, Katie Quackenbush got out of her car to escort her friend to a vehicle parked close by. She grabbed her gun and put a magazine inside. I don't know if it was Cosmopolitan or Marie Claire. Oh, no, we mean a clip. Okay, yeah. The folks at the Tennessean want everybody reading the story to know that that Katie Quackenbush has cooperated with police. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm guessing we won't see a lot of follow up on this story. But see, in that case, according to the Grant Stinchfield standard, Katie Quackenbush did not gut shoot Gerald Melton twice with a weapon. She gut shot him twice with a tool designed for self-defense. Mm-hmm. 54-year-old Gerald Melton remains hospitalized at Vanderbilt University Medical Center with, you know, critical injuries. Ah, well, so what if he dies? Because freedom. And after all, if we don't have a country that allows little 26-year-old blonde ladies to blow away 54-year-old homeless guys, you know, who don't have any guns or anything, then we're not free anymore here in Merca. The greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, forever, in the universe, under God. No, we don't have any freedom whatsoever. Yes, as Jason points out, another responsible gun owner, Merca. Yep. So we've got... So we've got that going on, because freedom. Last night I mentioned too the story of the sheriff of Polk County who remains unrepentant over his ham-fisted attempt to keep people out of shelters in Polk County, Florida during the hurricane. Well, he's not the only one. Of course he's not the only one. We could probably have a feature every night on this program called Police Behaving Badly. But I don't want to get into that degree of regimentation. It's about all I can do to come up with a different vegetable every evening. Have you tried high-powered jicama? Have you? You know, it'll put a sparkle in your eye and a spring in your step, as well as a whole bunch of dehydrated jicama in your innards, if you'll just order your first month's supply of high-powered jicama this evening. Yeah, right. Now, according to the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, a worker for the emergency services department in a county whose pronunciation I will get wrong, so therefore I will only spell it C-H-E-L-A-N. No, that emergency services worker is in a little bit of hot water because he posted a little something on the department's Facebook page by accident. Oopsie. Yeah, he only meant to post it to his personal page so that only people on his personal page would see what a vile attempt at a member of the human species this person was. We don't know the person's name yet because it's being withheld, because after all, that wouldn't be fair, would it? The sheriff of Chelan County is Brian Burnett, and Brian Burnett said, staff at Chelan County Emergency Management feel terrible that this inappropriate and hurtful post made it onto the Facebook page. Changes have already been made in procedure to assure nothing like this will ever occur in the future. What was it? Well, it was a poster. Well, it was a meme, okay? And it showed little stick figures being chased and run over by a big four-wheel drive sort of SUV-looking vehicle. And it of course, contained words as well. And the words that went along with the words that were the text that went along with the meme were as follows. And bear in mind, according to that county sheriff's office, they thought they were only posting about libtards on their own page. Libtards, you gotta love them. The image of a four-wheel drive SUV running over people. One is sort of in a mangled condition behind the vehicle, having already been run over. And the text reads, "All lives splatter. Nobody cares about your protest. Keep your ass out of the road." See what he done there? Splatter rhymes with matter, like in Black Lives Matter. And so he says, all lives splatter. Nobody cares about your protest. In other words, he, as a white person, doesn't care about the fact that people of color and their allies in this country are protesting the inordinate amount, number of times that people of color seem to be shot and killed in other ways by members of law enforcement in this country, nobody cares about your protest. In other words, nobody cares about the number of unarmed, arguably innocent people of color who are killed by police in this country. At least he doesn't. And therefore, if you're protesting in the road and a neo-Nazi, such as happened in Charlottesville, Virginia, and a neo-Nazi runs over you, then all lives splatter. Got it? Because nobody cares about your protest. Keep your ass out of the road. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, one Oregon police officer has been fired for suggesting that drivers push the right pedal when facing Black Lives Matter protesters. Three police officers and one firefighter have been caught across the country urging vehicle attacks on protesters because they've promoted themselves to summary executioner of anyone who with whose ideas they disagree. All lives splatter. And they're terribly embarrassed that this happened over on the CHELAN County Facebook page. Because, well, if he would have just posted it to his own personal page, it would have been fine. Because maybe then everybody wouldn't have known what a goddamn racist he is. Just his fellow racists. Oh, well, okay, I guess you're right. Arthur pointing out, all good humor has implicit murder with impunity, Brother Bob. Yeah. I mean, stop or I'll fire a warning shot into your guts twice. Ha, ha, ha. Right? Yeah. Ron and Raleigh, under the subject line, here in North Carolina, the courts have reinstituted alienation of affection lawsuits in marital cases. Perhaps that would have been a better solution. If a gun could be classified as a marital aid, could they now be made illegal in Alabama? Just asking. Well, or Texas. Well, I mean, yeah. We'll probably get to that in the second or third hour or something. Meanwhile, Glenn writes in, New York isn't one of the greatest places to live, but I'm fucking glad I live here and not down south. We're not allowed to just walk around with guns here. I feel much freer here.
Well, you will until somebody with a gun decides to take your freedom from you. And then you're going to wish you had it on you so that when he started shooting people in the back, you could say, hey, feller! And he'd turn around and he wouldn't shoot at you or nothing. He'd just stand there and you'd say, meet me in the middle of the street. And then you'd square off and somewhere somebody would go, yeah, whatever. Wah, wah, wah. And then somebody'd holler, draw. And you'd shoot it out just like in the old West. And there'd be some rough justice. With regard to Ms. Quackenbush, I'm sorry, every time I say the name, I hear Chico say, now see here, Dr. Hackenbush. Just, it's the curse of, you know, Marx Brothers. Sorry. No, Glenn says, I bet she gets off with no time at all. Oh, I'll bet those were the most terrifying 15 minutes she ever spent in her life there while she sat on a chair at the police station waiting for somebody to come and bail her out. Under the subject line, yeah, I think that kind of works. So we'll take a break. It's a Tuesday. That, of course, means that we've got the Green News Report on the way.
with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And consequently, we'll open the phone lines if you want to get involved and have a little conversation. I don't quite know what to do about fundraising anymore. I hate constantly mentioning it. It breaks the stride of the program. And yet, by the same token, we're coming up on an anniversary here in another 1 month and 12 days. And I just don't know. I don't know. I mean, I joke about the hotshot jicama and things like that. But it does, you know, over here on my end, you know, the program's free. Everything about the program's free. But the electricity that provides it, the internet service that provides it, and the food, you know, food that makes it possible, isn't. And I wish I could tell you that we were living the life of Riley, but we're not. And so with $375 to go, yeah, I gotta mention it. So there, it's mentioned. Let's take a break. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Thanks, Ron. Great idea.
It's Tuesday, September 12th, 2017.
Lots of crews are headed into Florida to try to restore some power.
Recovery efforts continue after Irma grinds a trail of destruction across Florida and into Georgia. Adding pollution to misery, sewage systems overflow, and EPA waives pollution rules.
We can take common sense measures which will not harm the American people.
Hurricanes Irma and Harvey may open a rift in the Republican Party's denial of climate change.
Doubt it.
Plus,
I do believe it's a bad decision. Once we reject that, thank you.
Miss North Dakota slams Trump's withdrawal from the Paris Climate Agreement, wins Miss America contest.
All of those wins and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We continue to take seriously the climate change, not the cause of it.
Well done, White House National Security Advisor Tom Bossert. Take climate change seriously, but not the cause. So much winning. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, another Green News Report. Another massive hurricane.
Yes, they keep on coming. Powerful Hurricane Irma left a swath of damage and destruction devastating the Florida Keys and causing widespread flooding across the entire state. U.S. naval carriers have been deployed to help with recovery efforts in the Florida Keys. Irma has now been downgraded to a tropical depression, but also has spawned tornadoes and widespread heavy flooding in neighboring states, particularly Georgia, South Carolina, and Alabama. More than 12 million people across several states had their power knocked out, mostly in Florida. A Florida Power and Light official said on Monday that the entire electric grid along the western coast of Florida will require, quote, a wholesale rebuild. Meaning power could be out for days or weeks. The Environmental Protection Agency and state environmental regulators issued a blanket waiver on Monday for Florida electricity companies to violate clean air and water standards without penalty for the next 2 weeks. That means allowing utilities to use dirtier fuels and bypass pollution controls, and also allowing coal-fired power plants to discharge more toxic wastewater than they are usually permitted.
Fantastic. That's what they did in Houston as well after Hurricane Harvey.
Yep.
It's like the Trump administration can't wait to waive pollution rules.
Well, Irma also flooded out sewage systems across Florida, swamping septic tanks widely used by homeowners, meaning Irma's receding floodwaters are leaving behind a poop flood, literally a residue of raw human sewage.
Wow.
Not to mention that the EPA has not yet even examined the 90 toxic Superfund sites across Florida. After Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Irma, there's a third major storm, Hurricane Jose. It made a near miss of Caribbean islands that were destroyed by Irma and is now spinning in the open Atlantic as a Category 2 storm. And forecasters say Jose could potentially head to the U.S. East Coast next week.
Well, then let's just start waiving the pollution rules in New York and New Jersey right now.
Officials are only now beginning to assess the extent and scale of the damage from two record-breaking back-to-back hurricanes hitting the U.S. within 2 weeks. A preliminary assessment from AccuWeather projected that combined economic losses from Harvey and Irma could amount to more than $290 billion. People are now asking if politicians in the U.S. will act on climate change and prepare the U.S. for the increasing impacts. But Trump administration officials, taking a page out of the NRA's playbook, continue to try to change the subject, saying now is not the right time to discuss climate change.
Of course.
EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt called mentioning climate change, quote, insensitive to the people of Florida. At a White House press briefing on Monday, Homeland Security Advisor Tom Bossert flat out rejected it.
We continue to take seriously the climate change, not the cause of it, but the things that we observe. And so there's rising floodwaters, I think 1 inch every 10 years in Tampa, things that would require prudent mitigation measures.
So they take climate change seriously, but they don't actually care what causes climate change and what could make climate change much worse in the future. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, try to wrap your brain around that.
Good luck.
But Miami's Republican mayor, Tomas Regalado, on Sunday told the Miami Herald, quote, if this isn't climate change, I don't know what is. This is truly a poster child for what is to come. And here's Republican Senator John McCain on CNN.
We can take common sense measures which will not harm the American people and our economy. In fact, solar and other technologies make it cheaper for energy for many of the American people, including a state like mine where we have lots of sunshine.
Hey, he finally noticed.
Pope Francis also had harsh words for climate science deniers in a press interview on Monday, saying, quote, "We have a moral responsibility. History will judge our decision." And even the newly crowned Miss America, North Dakota's Kara Mund, criticized the Trump administration's withdrawal from the International Paris Climate Accord, calling it a bad decision.
There is evidence that climate change is existing. So whether you believe it or not, we need to be at that table. And I think it's just a bad decision on behalf of the United States. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. President Trump's not going to be happy about that. For more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
American woman, stay away from me. American woman, mama, let me be.
And 15 minutes past the hour on this Titanic Tuesday, the 12th of September, 2017. This is The Horn. And I'm sort of battling against some internet nastiness, courtesy of Frontier. There's nothing, no storms outside, no lightning, no thunder. No nothing. So naturally, one out of two of the wildly expensive internet connections that we have here, I just sort of crashed for the hell of it. Yeah, oh well. Let's see if we can get it back, but it doesn't affect the ability to get the program out, apparently, so that's a good thing. Just had a note from Robert in Australia. Hey, good morning, Bob. Morning, Robert. He said it's the U.S. $50 challenge. I've checked the bank balance, and I can just manage this. If 10 people could match it, I'll be a happy Aussie. Signed, Robert from Australia. There's $50 came in, and Robert in Australia is imploring 10 other people to match. And, you know, that would get us out of the hole significantly and take a bite out of tomorrow even. So thank you, Robert. Thank you very, very, very kindly. I was looking forward to a conversation. I saw Clarity call in. I've walked away from the studio for a second when Clarity called, and then Angry checked in and said, "Hey, you know, I just got the new version of Skype. You want to try it out?" I said, "Sure," and we connected, and then we weren't connected anymore. So I'm gonna see if we can make that work. I don't know. But from the Department of, I really, honest to God, can't believe that yet, but I can. In the wake of Hurricane Harvey, with massive destruction along the Texas Gulf Coast, and even though it had significant problems of its own, and was about to have even more, seeing how it would soon be struck by an earthquake that would kill more than 60, and two people would be killed in a mudslide related to Hurricane Katia. Mexico jumped in and said, "Hey, we're here to help, whatever you need." Well, Mexico has now withdrawn. Mexico has now withdrawn its offer of hurricane recovery help. And by the way, the death toll from the earthquake is now up to at least 96 people. In southern Mexico, there's something on the order of 2.5 million people who are badly in need of aid. Mm-hmm. And this is just embarrassing. With all of that going on, and the fact that he tweets about every goddamn thing under the sun, Donald J. effing Trump couldn't get, somehow he couldn't make his tweeting thumbs work well enough to simply offer condolences for the suffering of the Mexican people the way that they had graciously offered not only condolences, but real world aid to the United States. They sent aid after Katrina. They offered aid after Harvey. They said, as the government of Mexico has always maintained, our country will not pay under any circumstances for a wall or physical barrier built on U.S. territory along the Mexican border. This determination is not part of a Mexican negotiating strategy, but a principle of national sovereignty and dignity. But they still offered the hurricane aid. We've offered the U.S. government all the help and cooperation that can be provided by the different Mexican governmental agencies to deal with the impacts of this natural disaster, as good neighbors should always do in times of difficulty. And then, well, then came yesterday. This is just sad. This is just sad and embarrassing. Sad and embarrassing and disgusting. Mexico had to, in the face of what had stricken it, Mexico said, well, we've got problems of our own to deal with. And in the meantime, not a single kind word from that hateful, ignorant, nasty man in Washington. Enrique Peña Nieto said, our solidarity is with the people of Florida affected by Hurricane Irma. We hope you stay safe and see a swift return to normal. Well, in 2017 in the United States of America, normal is only a setting on a dryer. And little else. A tweet costs nothing. But it only, well, you can't make someone who can't think of anyone but himself think of someone, you know, else. It's just sad. I sort of figured, you know, that at least deserved to be mentioned. Well, I'm sorry, Angry. I see your call coming in here, and I'm trying to connect and press answer, and it just won't answer. I'm sorry. That's deeply frustrating. But there's technically frustrating, and then there's the frustration of seeing... who was it that said justice delayed is justice denied? That's true. But then there's also just justice denied is justice denied. There will be no charges by the federal government against Baltimore police officers who were associated with the death of Freddie Gray. Yeah, the Baltimore Sun reports that sources inside the Justice Department is run by U.S. Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. Investigators in his Justice Department have declared that no charges are warranted. It's not even known now if there will be a public announcement of no charges or if they'll just hope that it goes the hell away. Because after all, 25 years old, Freddie Gray killed himself in the back of that van. Freddie Gray broke his own spine. Freddie Gray gave himself a rough ride. So everybody associated with his death, immediately associated with causing his death, is going to take a walk. You know, everybody but Freddie Gray. I don't know. If you live there, well, no, I'm not going to. How does anybody, particularly people of color, but my God, anybody interested in justice, how does anybody look at that and go, as an accident. Oops. Damn. What a pity Freddie Gray chose that particular time to up and die. So there's that. A bunch of other stuff, too. I'm dealing with Frontier at the moment as well. What fun. In regard to hurricane aid, Ron, up there in communist Canada, says, I'm embarrassed to say that I can't find any info indicating that Canada is sending anything to help Mexico. We're sending assessment teams to the Caribbean islands and hydro teams to Florida. They accepted the offer as opposed to Texas, who turned down medical practitioners, trauma specialists, rescue specialists, and experienced hydro crews with equipment. Suggesting that we should just send prayers instead. Thoughts and prayers. Can you imagine what would happen if an empty truck labeled, great big semi tractor trailer, and the trailer's just painted with the words thoughts and prayers, pulled up in some desperately in need Texas community, and the doors opened, and they said, "There ain't nothing in it." Well, yeah, it's plumb loaded with thoughts and prayers, and they're all yours. Yeah, they'd probably be a little riot. That would be a mean and shitty thing to do. But you know what else is mean and shitty? Sending thoughts and prayers. It just is. Oh, and speaking of assholes, I mentioned, and this is Titanic Tuesday, right? Yesterday I mentioned the shitty little tweets that Ann Coulter was sending out. Well, this evening it's Milo Yiannopoulos. In the aftermath of Irma, Milo Yiannopoulos jumped on social media and showed a picture of a house in Miami that had been demolished and had its roof torn off, and claimed that it was his because he was, just like Ann Coulter, pathetic and desperate for attention. When a reporter questioned him about it, Milo Yiannopoulos said, "It's a joke, not a dick, but apparently you can't get either." Yeah. He posted the picture and then said, "My house is gone." Tell me, what's funny about that? These people. Well, I'll tell you what, Robert's challenge is working nicely. Thank you. Thank you very kindly, Bob in Texas, and to another individual. I don't know if I should. Sometimes I have to be told when I can share names and stuff. But half of Bob's challenge, challenging folks to kick in $50 to get us out of the hole, half of that's been met, and that's tremendous. Thank you. Thank you, Bob, and a person whom I will name if you will tell me it's okay to name you. Thank you. What else for this Titanic Tuesday? How about this? If you remember from yesterday's program, you might recall that Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, suggested that not all of the victims of September the 11th, 2001, were in the buildings that were destroyed. She mentioned, for instance, Sikhs being beaten because they were mistaken for being Muslim, which Sikhs are decidedly not. Or various people terrorized over their ethnicity in the wake of that disaster. Well, let's add another. Apparently now, in our national grief holiday, we celebrate it by doing something shitty to somebody from the Middle East, otherwise known as Western Asia. In this particular instance, and out in the heartland, the grief was settled upon a man by the name of Sattar Ali. Sattar Ali has been studying for his doctorate in mechanical engineering at Wichita State University. Now, Sattar Ali is indeed originally from Iraq. But he's not one of those folks who came over because he was a collaborator with the U.S. in our little attack. No. He's not from the dim leader era. Sattar Ali has been in the United States since 1993. He's raised a family here. And via a story in the Wichita State Sunflower, the student newspaper, written by Jenna Farhat, managing editor. Sattar Ali went to the bank. He had his wife and child with him. They were waiting for him. Sattar Ali walked into the Emprise Bank, located at 21st Street and Woodlawn Avenue in Wichita, with a check. He didn't go in to cash the check. Didn't do anything untoward. He didn't present the check to negotiate and say, "I want it all in pennies." He went in to deposit his check in his account. The check was for $151,000. You see, Sattar Ali had just sold a home up in Michigan. But upon presenting the check for $151,000 at the bank, which, you know, let's be clear, it was not accompanied by a note that said this is a stick-up, and even if it had, that would have meant that Sattar Ali really didn't understand the idea of bank robbery. You don't walk in and hand them a check that you've endorsed that's made out to you for $151,000 and hand them a note that says this is a stick-up, I'm giving you $151,000. That would have made Sattar Ali, well, we'd be saving him for Monday. No, this is just a guy who sold his house, went to the bank, you know, his bank. Hey, good morning, Mr. Ali. Oh, hey, good morning. He had very little time had passed after he presented the check when suddenly 15, count them, 15 1¼ dozen police cruisers came screaming up to the bank. More than 15. Police poured out of the cars and ran in, grabbed Sattar Ali, and arrested him, handcuffed him, and dragged him out to one of the police cruisers where he noticed that his wife and their 15-year-old daughter were also sitting in the cruiser under arrest. By the way, when he had the check, he showed up with all the documentation that goes with it, and everything that would be needed to verify the check, including, you know, the identifying information for the company that had written him the check. And only after they had him in cuffs and his wife in the cuffs and his 15-year-old incredibly dangerous daughter, not in custody, did the cops look down and go, "I'll be damned. It looks like this here is a money check. And looks like here that he's got the identification necessary for us to call and verify the validity of the check. Son of a bitch." Sattar Ali said, "We were devastated, terrified, crying the whole time. We had no idea what the arrest was for. They were arrested at 11:30 a.m. Central Daylight Time. They were held in separate cells." Yeah, they put the 15-year-old in a cell until 3 p.m. Really? Sattar Ali does not understand. He said, "Let's assume I made a mistake and gave them a bad check. Why would they arrest my wife and daughter? How would they know those people are with me?" He said, you know, I'd expect this in the 1950s, not now. Mr. Ali, you'd better learn to expect it now. Because in many ways, this country is every bit as bad as it was in the 1950s, depending on whom one is. He continued and told the Sunflower, I don't want people to feel sad for me. I just want people to be aware that we have an issue. This shouldn't be a product of 21st century. No, in what we call what passes for the civilized world, it shouldn't be, Mr. Ali. But you, sir, do not live in the civilized world. You, sir, are in Merca. I'll leave off the reverb this time. And yes, he is going to take legal action in response to what happened, and he damned well should. And, of course, the lawyer for the cops will be there in court arguing that the cops were acting in good faith because, you know, somebody at the bank just decided to press the silent alarm, and they did what cops always do when the silent alarm goes off down there to the Sunflower Bank. I'm sorry, the M-Prize Bank. And they responded as they've been trained to. And, of course, they saw a brown woman and they saw a brown girl, so they knew immediately that they were probably dealing with terrorists, because if it had been a white woman and a white girl, they would have known that there might have been some sort of mistake. But this was a brown woman and a brown girl, so it was necessary to get them under arrest without telling them what they were under arrest for. Or ever reading them a charge, or reading them their rights, or informing them in any way of why they were being mistreated in the way that they were. James with a note says, WTF. It's Kansas, Bob. After two terms of Governor Dumbfuck, nobody in Kansas has any money left. Oh, so, yeah, so the Arab shows up with $150,000, and, well, you know, he's probably going to give it to George Soros or the Tides Foundation or the Muslim Brotherhood, and nobody wants that. Of course, the thing is, the whole reason he had the money was because he was coming back to Wichita. They moved back to Wichita on August the 21st, the Ali family did. Mm-hmm. Usually I advise staying out of the comments, but some of those on this university's website are telling. This story isn't shocking for those who live and work with narrow-minded people. Why apologize for being ignorant? Do something about these racist law enforcement officers and inexperienced bank employees. I worked in banking, and that check could have been verified if these bank employees were properly trained. These bank employees saw the name and face of someone they assumed should or would not have that kind of money. Ridiculous. Justice for the Ali family cannot come soon enough. So once the bank figures out what it did to the Ali family, do you suppose the bank's lawyer will say, guys, you know, you just need to write him a check for about $50,000. You just bought him into a nicer neighborhood, guys. Or will they tough it out and because after all, the jury's going to be drawn from, you know, the general confines of Wichita, and that means that the Ali family's going to have to sit there in front of that jury, and the jury's going to be made up of good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Christians mostly, and you know damned well how that jury will vote in a civil suit. Yeah. You know, you'd like to say, well, you know, I mean, this is a one-off. I mean, that doesn't happen all the time in America. But it does. It absolutely does. And it provides cold comfort. But it is at least noteworthy that, no, this kind of viciousness and racism, and even worse, is not confined to the United States. And in many instances, it's a matter of people who, it's a matter of money. Now, if Mr. Ali had walked in with a check for $150 or maybe even $1,000, they wouldn't have called the law. But he didn't. He walked in with a check for $151,000, and nobody knows, and everybody knows that ain't no Arab in America got any business with that kind of money. Right? Well, let's go to Brazil, shall we? Most Americans have no idea of the vast size of Brazil and the amount of it that remains largely unexplored and unknown. There are people in the forests of Brazil who have still managed to not interact very much with white folks, and, you know, pretty lucky in that regard, because when they do run into the white folks, they have a way of getting dead. There was, note the verb tense, there was a group of uncontacted Amazonians deep in the jungle near the border with Peru and Colombia. But of course, there are minerals to be had in the Amazon basin. And there are people, they're wildcat illegal miners, and they're known as garimperos. Are you listening, Flavio? Is that even close? I don't know. But they got back from working their illegal mine and started bragging that they had met as many as 10 human beings who were unfamiliar with the ways of the white people. So naturally, the garimperos, although there were more of them than there were of the miners, the garimperos said, so we killed them. And then, because they realized that maybe it wasn't okay, they made a point of slitting the bodies and then dropped them into the Handaituba River so they wouldn't float. They did first strip all the jewelry and the tools from the dead indigenous people. The bragging was recorded and turned over to Brazilian government authorities. And an investigation is underway. Survival International's director Stephen Corey said, if these reports are confirmed, Brazilian President Michel Temer and his government bear a heavy responsibility for this genocidal attack. Because, among other things, funds have been slashed for the government agency charged with protecting uncontacted tribes. And according to Mr. Corey, they are defenseless against thousands of invaders, gold miners, ranchers, and loggers, desperate to steal and ransack their lands. He continued and said, all these tribes should have had their lands properly recognized and protected years ago. The government's open support for those who want to open up indigenous territories is utterly shameful and is setting indigenous rights in Brazil back decades. Brazil has closed at least 5 of the 19 bases that it has previously used to monitor uncontacted tribes, and from which they seek, largely in futility, to prevent the aforementioned rustlers, gold miners, renegade loggers, and Methodists from you know, slaughtering the natives. Not much is known of these tribes, and there are at least 10 of whom little to nothing will be known other than that they were murdered, as, you know, has been the case for 500 years or more in the European pursuit of wealth. Pathetic. We lose more than we know in incidents like that. And it's awful. Hey, let's run over and check in with Clarity. Hey, Clarity.
Gee, what a nice cheery lead-in you give me today, Bob.
Yeah, sorry.
Nah, it's all right.
I mean, the stories like that make me crazy.
Well, and I was just going to say that we did it in California. What the missions didn't kill off. When the gold rush came in, you know, we slaughtered even more to get them out. Prospecting, you know, if you get between a greedy person and the minerals, whether it's diamonds, gold, silver, coal, oil, as in the case of the Navajo Nation, you know, just look out, because they're going to have a bulldozer or a bullet for you and your kin. And Brazil is no different. You know, they were the last nation in the Western Hemisphere to abolish slavery, as far as I know.
I think you're right.
But, you know, there's been incidents like this with miners in Venezuela, Colombia, Guyana, as well as Brazil and Peru. So it's, you know, it's pretty much pervasive throughout South America. And they learned their lessons from us. Pretty much. You know, we wrote the book on how to conquer the land, how to depopulate, you know. And we called it Manifest Destiny. We called it whatever, you know.
Well, a lot of that is true, Clarity, and I'm not being, just trying to be obnoxious. But the Spanish and the Portuguese pretty much wrote their own book, too.
Yeah, well, you know, if they couldn't extract it from their interpretation of the Roman Catholic St. Paulian, you know, creed, yeah, sure, they'd write their own Magna Carta to justify, you know, all the inhumane things they did.
Oh, I remember being a little boy. And back then, we were, as kids in elementary school, we were taught things like this. I remember being taught about the line of demarcation. You remember that phrase?
You mean like the Mason-Dixon line?
Well, no, this was the line that was established by the Pope to declare what Portugal could have versus what Spain could have.
Oh, okay. All right. Now you're, yeah.
Particularly in South America. And, of course, it came with disastrous consequences. Portugal pretty much got Brazil, and Spain got everything else. Not, I mean, it's oversimplification. And then they moved in with a will and started slaughtering everything that wasn't Spanish or Portuguese. And then they started importing slaves.
Yeah.
Are you familiar? I hate sometimes that everything's a movie reference. But do you remember the Jeremy Irons, Robert De Niro vehicle called The Mission?
Vaguely.
Some of the most beautiful scenery I think that's ever been contained in a motion picture. And it has to do with exactly that, the dynamic tension between the Spanish and the Portuguese, and of course the people who were on the losing end of that, namely the people who'd been living there for 15,000 years.
Oh, absolutely. And you talk about lost horticulture, water management, all those things were lost that the Mayans had developed.
Oh, and I mean, we're well south of the Mayans. People pretty much know about the Andean culture, but there's an entirely separate culture in the Amazon basin that remains largely a mystery to this day. We're talking about land management. We're talking about forest management. Because I was down there, that white folks had a hard time conceptualizing. But there's a beginning of scholarship that's been going on for, you know, maybe a little over 20 years now, that is beginning to think, if you can imagine the scale of something like this, that the entire Amazon basin was managed forest.
Wow.
And into Bolivia, or what is now Bolivia, and it's mind-boggling.
But if they had the boats, everything, their infrastructure was built in with the water. Where in North America, there was vast areas of land that was hard to, you know, track over, and the trade was more or less in the eastern part of North America, and the southwest was, you know, underdeveloped mostly because of the way the resources were distributed.
Well, and also because of the way the resources have been mismanaged. There's always a risk of as a person of European colonial descent of engaging in the opposite of manifest destiny, which is noble savagism, which is no help either. And one of the peoples who completely screwed themselves out of their environment through a combination of both consumption, overpopulation, and a shifting climate were the people who built the vast Pueblo cliff dwellings throughout the Southwest from Utah and Colorado down into Arizona and New Mexico.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and you see that in a lot of civilizations, once they have cut down their forests up until the coal petroleum age, they pretty much couldn't, you know, survive anymore in that area. And the areas, like once you got out of the Tigris-Euphrates area there, once, you know, that was all logged off, the soils were gone, and then Greece, they cut down all their forests, and then Italy, you know, and they moved across Europe, and then once they could cut everything down in Britain, then they went into North America, and clear cut as they went.
Right, and the Mayans did the same to themselves. They clear cut for purpose, you know, they needed firewood in order to create the fires that they used to make the lime, which they then used to plaster the pyramids.
Okay.
And make them all shiny and white so that they could paint on them.
Yeah.
We forget the fact that, you know, if you see pictures of, say, Chichen Itza or Uxmal or Palenque or any of those places, you know, those magnificent ruined pyramids, every one of those sumbitches was painted white and then had other paint on top of it. And they deforested themselves in making the lime to make the plaster.
Yeah, building materials. Yeah, exactly.
And then they had horrible erosion problems.
Sure. Rainforest, yeah.
And that kind of wrecked the magnificent corn, bean, squash, maize-based agricultural model.
And they didn't have the animals, you know, for the to return the manures back into the soil as well. They didn't have that form of agriculture that we have since, you know, we invaded.
Well, I mean, the people of the Valley of Mexico certainly did. That's how they built the Chinampas.
Oh, okay. All right.
They didn't have draft animals because I can't imagine wanting to try to domesticate a goddamn buffalo. I mean, cattle are pretty big and scary by themselves. Yeah, now let's try to domesticate a buffalo. It doesn't work very well.
Yeah, they're half again twice the size and about twice as fast on their feet.
And not nearly as arguably slow-witted as, say, an ox.
No.
You know,
no,
dumb as an ox is a saying for a reason. And in fact, Alexander the Great named his horse, whom he loved dearly, and went on campaign with him. Alexander the Great named his horse Bucephalus, and that means ox head. Horse was
so
Otne.
He wasn't a horse whisperer.
No, the horse was Otne Ute Aitbre, if you own a what I mean. Saying that for the horse,
you.
And saying that so as not to offend the non-Pig Latin speaking horses in the audience, of course. A horse is a horse, of course, of course.
Exactly. But yeah, the indigenous people have had the unfortunate circumstance of being born on top of all this land that someone else has got a better purpose for. You know, it's just bad karma on their part. And these wildcatters and prospectors, you know, small business people, they're deregulating the Indian Nation.
Right. They're just pursuing the essential necessities of the free market, Clarity.
Exactly. There's all them resources out there just begging to be exploited. And if you can just get the tree huggers and the engines out of the way, by golly, you could make a fortune there from nothing.
Well, and don't forget the bunny huggers and the rock lickers. Apparently, environmentalists out in Utah are referred to as rock lickers.
I've heard of Goldschlager. You know, that's a rock licker. Do I get a bell for that?
I was reaching for it even as you asked.
But, and I like puns too. Yeah, it's, you know, and I was thinking of HGW Bush 41. As soon as he got out of office, he bought a bunch of interest in that Canadian mining company, and they had some miners going on strike there in, was it Congo? Nigeria?
Oh, are you talking about Barrick Gold Strike Limited?
Yeah, and they buried him alive in the mine just to shut down the strike.
Yeah, those were diamond miners. I think that was a mining outfit that maybe Pat Robertson had an interest in the name of Jesus.
Yes, but Elder Bush also, his hands were implicated.
Wouldn't surprise me. Of course, one of the things I've always wondered about with the Bushes, what were they planning to do with those 300,000 acres or so that they purchased up by the Bolivian border in Paraguay?
One of the best aquifers in southern South America.
Ta-da!
Well, and, you know, looking down the road, water's not going to get any cheaper.
No, and you know, one of the things I keep wondering about, I wonder if the wealth, because there's reason to think that uh, that if there's going to be a salvation to the human species, that it's probably going to come out of the global south. And I keep wondering if maybe some of the violence that we see that continues to roil places like Somalia and South Sudan and, you know, the Lord's Resistance Army and Tanzania and Uganda and terrorist attacks in Kenya, and of course, you know, almost unchecked disease outbreaks in the western part of the continent. I keep wondering if maybe in the hip pocket of the wealthy is this notion that after they've gotten done shitting in their own nests, that if they can just get places like the South American continent and the African continent sufficiently depopulated, that they'll have a nice place for them to go and live. Because, you know, there's a lot of unexplored land left in both places.
Well, that and the Northern Hemisphere is getting, there's certain areas that are going to be unlivable, you know, for reasons, you know, so much methane in the atmosphere, radiation, you know, in the food chain, you know, who knows, flooding and, you know, the diseases that are related to flooding. If we stop, you know, funding vector control.
Yeah. Look at the, if you go back and look at the stories of the EPA being MIA in the aftermath of Harvey, the stories of the toxic waste sites and the Superfund sites down along the Texas Gulf Coast, I mean, as an Appalachian, I'm pretty jaded, Clarity. But those things made me even go, "Wow, Jesus Christ, you're kidding." They've literally gotten away with murder.
Well, not only that, but the city officials saying that our drinking water's fine, you know, and you know, just don't touch the water that's running by your house that's just went by the refinery that's underwater. And don't touch that water because we don't know what's in it right away, and we're not going to tell you anyway. But the drinking water coming out of your tap should be okay. Our water treatment plant is still working.
Yeah, once you get past the antibiotics and the antidepressants and the itsy-bitsy teeny fibers of plastic.
Microplastics, yeah.
Is that it? Microplastics.
That's what they're calling it now, microplastics.
You know, you can almost see Dustin Hoffman floating in the swimming pool there, and the guy, maybe, no, he had the dive, he had the scuba suit on coming. I got one word for you, microplastics.
Yeah, well, that's what Harry Shearer has inserted the word micro into, you know, because he has the quote from The Graduate, use it for an intro to that part of his program. But you didn't see the post from The Guardian I put up, did you?
I don't think so, no.
Well, the U.S. is number one. In the
USA, USA, USA. Do I need to cue up Lee Greenwood, Clarity?
Well, I don't know. But we have it was 87% of the sites tested had microplastics in the municipal water.
Yeah, I did see that. That's what I'm referring to. Yes.
Okay. And that Dasani water is just a municipal water, but they don't test it for microplastics, so they, you know. And there's basically no way to get it out. It's, the stuff is, you know, like one micron or even smaller than a micron.
It's too particulated. So,
yeah, it's broken down too much, and it's,
you know, that just makes my pancreas feel great.
Well, you're eating it. You're not soaking in it, but you're eating.
Oh,
it.
Oh, we're soaking in it too, Clarity. And you know, maybe at sizes that tiny, maybe it even gets through the semi-permeable membrane that is the largest single organ of the human body, to wit, the skin. Yay.
To wit, yes, we are semi-permeable, aren't we?
Well, I mean, we kind of learned that the hard way here. you'd send, you know, mamas would send their kids to the bath and everything, and you know, 7, 8 years old, and they've got horrible diseases, and you wonder, well, where the hell did they? Or, you know, now make sure you brush your teeth, children, and they do, and their teeth dissolve in their heads. And then Diane Sawyer comes along and does a hard-hitting journalistic expose on Mountain Dew mouth. I shit you not. You got children living with poisoned water from mining communities, and they, you know, that's because you're putting Mountain Dew in the baby's bottles there.
Well, or the wife washes the miners, or somebody that works in a chemical plant washes their clothes with the kids' clothes.
Yeah.
And they get exposed to those heavy metals or persistent, you know, hydrocarbons in their clothes, or, you know, the dryer's running in the house.
Well, so, and when you get right down to it, have you ever actually tasted Similac? It tastes like shit. You know, put a little Mountain Dew in it, just perks it up a little. And besides, you know, the little bit of caffeine kick from the Mountain Dew, you know, baby's a little bit more active, kicks around, probably figures out how to crawl and sit up and walk and do all those baby milestone things a little quicker.
Well, they used to give me coffee when I was a child to calm me down, so it might work that way.
And then they get to do exposés about babies with Mountain Dew mouth. Oh, well.
Oh, well. That's, well, you're talking about public health now, and they say our teeth are worse than the British.
It's damn near impossible to get decent dental coverage in this country. We don't consider it to be part of the, and you know, this boggles my mind to this day. I'm expecting that the Medicare for All bill will launch in the Senate just any day now, and when it does, what do you want to bet there's nothing in it about dental care?
Or eye care. After my mom retired.
Oh, I care too, but I care too, Clarity. But what do you want to bet there's nothing in there about dental care? No, I'm sorry. I'm giving myself a cowbell for that.
The bells. Hear the tintinnabulation of
the bells.
Yes. I'm just a pole boy, or a poor gal, as the case may be.
Now, Ron, in the far soon-to-be-frozen north, but still kind of squishy and sloppy.
Hail, great white north.
Yes. Says, I have to point out that there are high-volume filters for municipal water systems that will filter out particles down to 0.3 microns. Once they've been in service for a few days, the filtration is even finer. I'm not challenging that. Then how did this stuff show up in the samples? Because what was the percentage, Clarity? What
87% of the samples in the U.S.
And these are samples that are just taken out of people's taps, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's municipal tap water.
So
it's in the Guardian this week.
So when I buy a jug of water and it says guaranteed, bona fide, no kidding, sure enough, spring water, and then the fine print says taken from the municipal water supply of Donut Hole, of Donut Center, paren, it's a hole.
Death Valley.
Then it's just they've got a tap and they pay a water bill like everybody else.
Absolutely. And they get it for $0.15 a thousand, and sell it for $2 a gallon.
Yeah, and by the way, Asa pointing out regarding Mountain Dew mouth. Let's put it this way: Honey Boo Boo Child didn't do any good for the plight of Appalachian people, and she wasn't even really an Apple. Well, she kind of was, but yeah, I understand. But she moved on past Mountain Dew at a very tender age. Honey Boo Boo was doing like Monster mixed with Mountain Dew, mixed with Red Bull, mixed with high caffeine coffee, et cetera, and just And I call it my pick-me-up, you know, she said at the tender age of 7.
Well, and you know, most all your drinks for kids are very acidic. You know, even your juices can be pretty acidic.
Sure.
And if you're not drinking any water, which a lot of kids, if they can get away with it, they won't drink water. They'll drink juice and pop all day. You know, and it's no wonder that their teeth are soft.
And I try really, really hard to make sure that I consume more water than anything else. We love our sweet tea here, but you know, I don't do the sugary version. But I try to get a good bit of water in. I just, you know, you like tasting something else once in a while, but it is a damnable tough habit to break.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and we're geared, you know, genetically to, you know, sweet things or something that gives you quick energy that can get you to the next part of your hunt, you know, and you know, breaking open a bone and stuff to get the fatty acids and things takes more work. You know, there's more calories in eating a brain or you know, the center of a big hollow bone. But it also takes tools. It takes effort to do that. We're picking berries, stealing honey from bees, that sort of thing. You know, that's quick, easy calories. And now, it's the cheapest thing in the market is sugar, sweets.
And by the way, Ron informs me the rate in Ontario is $3.50 per 1 million liters. It's around 250,000 gallons. Thanks, Nestle.
Wow. I wish they quit asking for water here in Oregon.
Y'all don't really have it to spare, do you?
We won't. I mean, we're doing okay, you know, during wet years. But when it's dry, there's a lot of places in East Oregon. The wells start going dry, and the water table can't be drawn down too much.
Any more word on the Trump administration turning down Oregon for more firefighting funds? Thing.
Well, you know, I think probably you remember what the bikers said about Kate Brown, that bitch governor, they call her.
I missed that, but I'll take your word for it.
Well, the story about the bikers that we played for, and they listened to one song and all got on their motorcycles.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay.
Well, before we started playing, we were listening to the conversation, and they were talking about, you know, the I-5 mafia and the state of Portland and that bitch governor. Because on this side of the state, it's, you know, very Trump Tennistan, you know, meth heads and rednecks. So anyway, my point was that I'm sure Trump probably refers to Kate Brown as that bitch governor, too. And the fact that Merkley's been outspoken about how wrong the Republican agenda is kind of makes him a thorn in the side of the leadership. And so, you know, and he just got reelected. So, you know, he does have the freedom to speak out more than he normally would. But I think Merkley knows about healthcare because his wife's a nurse, and I think she has told him that when people don't have healthcare, their health goes south in a hurry, and that if people do have regular healthcare, they don't cost so damn much to care for. But every time they go to the emergency room, it's major cost, and it doesn't help their health. It just, you know, keeps them from choking to death, overdosing, killing themselves, hopefully, you know, if they're suicidal. But other than that, you know, if they don't have medical care, it costs everybody. And that's what I like about Merkley. And I think he's, you know, signed on for the Medicare for All. And he said that almost all his town meetings, everybody all raised their hands that, you know, single payer Medicare for All is what would be the best option.
Well, it certainly seems like it would, but my God, I hope you're when this thing drops, I hope you're ready for the firestorm from the Republicans screaming about a government takeover of health care.
Well, right after they say that, you know, we ain't gonna pay for these hormones, we ain't gonna pay for none of this, you know, switching genders, because, you know, that ain't something that government should pay for, and this is just really silly Hollywood gamesmanship and da-da-da, you know. I mean, I see us on the firing line real soon, you know, just being an object of the next culture war.
Well, you already are. They've run through, you know, they ran through black folks and they ran through women. Although they still
ran through the gangs.
They
although, ran through the bush where rabbit wouldn't go.
Yeah, that's true. Nice. Wait a minute. I guarantee we are the only radio program in America today where there's where we were engaged in a discussion about the various people put upon and discriminated against in this country, and that was segued into the Battle of New
Johnny
Orleans
Horton.
By Johnny Horton.
There we go.
We're just culturally aware, Bob.
We are. We damned well are. But you know, no. The point is, you're next.
I know.
It's pretty obvious that the trans community is next. And of course, every time whoever's next is next, the booger eater outrage goes to 11. Because they just can't imagine anybody living that way.
No.
I mean, I got okay. So you kind of opened the door on this. You know about Ted Cruz's little porn problem, I trust.
You know, you tweeted about that today, but I didn't know he had a wiener issue.
Yeah. Well, I take that on faith, right?
Tony, as in, you know, Anthony.
Yeah. Oh. Well, okay.
A wiener problem.
Yeah. Know. Exactly. So somehow or another, Ted Cruz's Twitter account, and this is just lighthearted fun. This isn't earth-shattering or anything, but God, insofar as it touches upon Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, you kind of gotta. I mean, this guy is wrapped up in his piety and his evangelical Christianity, and so it turned out somebody on his Twitter account accidentally liked a porn clip. Accidentally. A porn clip. Now, this, of course, opens up other lines of inquiry, Clarity, such as,
sure.
Why is there, I mean, I use Twitter and everything. I don't know how many porn clips. I mean, I scroll through my Twitter a whole bunch. You're pretty good at the tweeting. And I don't see in my feed, I mean, I got a lot of different people in my feed, but I have never, not once, just scrolled along and went, oh, okay, I'll click on this. And
I got a hunch.
And it's a clip of a woman who walks into her home to find two people in there naked having the sexy time, and she stays just a little bit. I'm basing this only, mind you, on having seen a screen cap of it. I've not actually watched it. But she sort of stays back behind the corner and gets a hand down the panties and starts enjoying the scene for herself.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I know. As the...
It's not an ad for panty shields, I take it.
I don't think so.
Okay.
So there's the question of why that's on Ted Cruz's feed in the first place.
Well, I got a hunch.
Well, so does he, and that's probably why it's on there.
Okay, I got you. Well, you know.
Wait a minute! Damn it! You're going too. Yeah, I get a bell for hunch. Okay.
Well, but you know, back when they were getting for the Obama vote for the Obama care repeal, affordable care. You know, there was probably a hashtag that was must pass, and he left out the P, so it was must ass, and it popped up.
So now it's clearly a matter, you know, there are 9 people who have access to Senator Cruz's Twitter feed, and it was an entirely
an
unintended like of that porn feed with the sexy time in it. This is the direct quote. There are a number of people on the team that have access to the account, and it appears that someone inadvertently hit the like button. Of course, before that, he claimed, my Twitter account was hacked. And then as to whether the person would be terminated or disciplined, we're dealing with it internally, but it was a mistake. It was not malicious conduct. Well, now, how do you maliciously watch porn, Clarity? Can you help me here? Because I'm really at sea on this one, malicious porn watching.
You know, maybe when he was in one of those secret rooms talking about strategy, they got the wrong IP address when the NSA was watching in, and I blame it on the deep government, deep threads there, you know, to keep Ted from talking too much and being too mavericky.
So you're blaming it on the deep throat state?
Yeah, that and the fact that, you know, I think he's just fighting inside, you know, because he is Latino, that, you know, he really wants to show Trump that he has...
That he belongs here.
Yeah, that he's, you know, he's...
That he's not stealing some Senatin job that some good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing white person would really like to have.
Yeah, tienes huevos, you know, like that.
Okay, so here's where it gets even more fun, because the goddess of irony at this point has Ted Cruz by his pointy, waxen little nose. I mean, she's got a finger up both nostrils going, come this way. Okay, we're talking about Ted Cruz and porn. I probably shouldn't use the line come this way. Sorry, strike that. We'll get that in post-production. So back when he was the Solicitor General of Texas, Texas had a ban on the sale of marital aids, and I'm not talking about some woman in Missouri who puts a fully loaded semi-automatic pistol up her hoo-ha. It was illegal in Texas back when Ted Cruz was Solicitor General to sell buzzy things and, you know, dildos and pleasure devices and, you know, fur-lined wrist cuffs and stuff.
Oh, no.
It was illegal. And, of course, there was a lawsuit to try to strike it down. And Ted Cruz, as Solicitor General, argued the following to the Supreme Court, or the Court of Appeals, rather. There is no substantive due process right to stimulate one's genitals for non-medical purposes unrelated to procreation or outside of an interpersonal relationship. We have to protect public morals, and because we have to protect public morals in Texas, police power interests in discouraging prurient interests in sexual gratification and combating the commercial sale of sex and protecting minors allows us to have this law. We have a government interest in discouraging autonomous sex. These are actual things that were argued by the guy who just got caught with, you know, liking a porn clip on his Twitter feed, which was definitely not Ted Cruz, because, you know, if you were married to a hottie like Heidi, you'd never, you know, like a porn clip on your Twitter feed or anything.
Well, when you could be procreating, you should be procreating, not a masturbating.
Well, there you go. And as Ron up in Communist Canada points out, you can salaciously watch porn, but maliciously, not so much. You know, to maliciously watch porn, you'd think that would become painful at some point in time. But then again, maybe there are people who maliciously watch porn, and that's part of what they get off on, and that's fine if they consent. You know, they're by themselves.
Well, and that's, you know, that's kind of comes around to they are talking about releasing the automakers from the CAFE standards that Obama had imposed because they're also indexing for inflation. And for every tenth of a mile that they don't meet the standards, it's going to cost them $15 now instead of $5. And that's just too much oppression. And they just would rather go back and produce Suburbans that get 8 miles a gallon if they can get deregulated.
Have you priced a Suburban lately?
Well, then they should be getting better mileage too, so you can afford to make payments on the damn thing.
Well, that's the whole thing. People are willing to pay $70,000 for a vehicle that gets 8 miles a gallon.
Well, it was the best technology we had in 1948. You know, the way the powertrain's designed and everything else, you know?
That's what they go for now. I mean, yeah. a reasonably tricked out Chevy Suburban will bring you, you'll get out the door at $70,000.
Yeah.
And they'll finance it for up to 8 years.
Well, and, you know, if they don't have all that extra California pollution control stuff on it, you can probably save a couple thousand on top of that. And then you don't have to change your catalytic converter every 30,000 miles. Or 80,000, whatever it is.
I did catch a press release the other day. Volkswagen says that it will its entire fleet will be electrically powered by 2030. That's a pretty ambitious goal.
It is, but you know, if we repeal all the stuff that's supposed to get our CAFE standards, and it's not just fuel, which the petroleum companies I'm sure are in on this, you know as well, but it's also how much stuff gets put in the air. If you're using the fuel more efficiently, you don't have as much stuff coming out the tailpipe. You don't have as much particulates coming out. You know, you name it. You won't be paying, you know, for children's inhalers and all the stuff that deals with respiratory disease.
I know. Wouldn't it be lovely if we didn't burn coal anymore? The statistical excess death rate related to coal-fired electricity would, you know, probably drop to, you know, zero because it couldn't be related to the production of coal-based electricity. Because you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, and the Cash for Clunkers program was meant to get some of these old, inefficient vehicles off the road. And then, you know, they improved standards. You know, efficiency standards for trucks, not as much as they could have, but because to get them up to those higher CAFE standards, they had to clean up the exhaust. It's, you know, the newer trucks aren't nearly as dirty as the ones, you know, that are 20 or 30 years old, but trucks are the dirtiest overall. Cars don't put out any kind of nearly as filthy of exhaust. Being a bicyclist, I see it firsthand, you know.
I can well imagine you do.
But, you know, that's what they were talking about last night on KPFA, about, you know, the EPA, what they're doing now.
Well, what the EPA is doing now is just going backwards.
Yeah. Forward into the past.
Yeah, in four-wheel drive at 5 miles a gallon. Well, what's good for ExxonMobil's good for the planet, except when it's not.
They kind of wagged their finger at Hillary Clinton for some of her, you know, dealings with the Saudis and stuff where it looked like she, you know, the Clinton Foundation got money. But it's nothing like what Tillerson's setting himself up for. Nothing even close as far as what he's trying to get worked in with Russia. And, you know, he's might as well be an oligarch, you know, a Russian oligarch himself. Just a couple of sanctions less, and he would be.
Yes, if can have Dasha in Dallas, absolutely.
It's nice there in the January in Moscow. Not very nice.
Not so nice in Moscow. No.
Not in January. No. Titties freeze off.
Yeah, okay, yeah, stereo, clarity, stereo. Well, it's awful good. It's awful good to hear from you. And you're getting a little bit of respite out there, are you not?
Yes. Last night actually wasn't too bad. This morning it was a little bit stinky, but yeah, it's clearing up. They say, according to the Willamette Week, which is the Portland magazine, the Forest Service says that it'll be the end of June before they get the Eagle Creek fire under control. So I was hoping sooner.
Wait, the end of when?
End of September, I'm sorry.
Okay, because you had...
Another 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. But they've got the interstate highway blocked off so that they can have quick access, because the way the gorge is there, it's very steep, and they don't want to have crews get stuck on the side of those, you know, if they have a blower from the backside.
Right.
Everything is just tinder dry. And,
now all you got to do is keep the 15-year-olds from shooting off more fireworks.
Well, yeah, you think, you know, they would have shot them up by now. I mean, the 4th of July is, what, 2 months, 2.5 months ago? And that was the last time they were selling them here in the Northwest.
Well, just remember, New Year's Eve is not that far away. I don't know about out there, but the little tents go up here for New Year's, too.
With the rain, well, hopefully things won't be that volatile by then. I went to Portland back yesterday, and there wasn't a lot of burning on the riverside. You could tell that up on the top of the ridges there had been fires. You could see a little bit of it, but it's out of sight, really. There was a couple little spot fires in areas that was so steep, I think they just kind of had to let them go because it's just too dangerous to get a crew in there on that steep of a slope. And, you know, they just hope that it goes out. They had a helicopter, a big Huey helicopter, dipping into the river and dumping water.
Oh, one buckets. Of those big Chinooks?
Yeah.
The twin rotored one?
Yeah, one rotor in front, rotor in back. Probably borrowed from the National Guard. You know, the Oregon National Guard, which is our militia doing their work.
Which is, it does not happen for free. And it'll be interesting to see if the Trump administration ever decides that Oregon actually needs some disaster relief. But I wouldn't.
Well, there was only one district in the whole state. That was Walden's district that went Republican. The whole rest of the state was pretty much Democrat. The state Senate, House is both Democrat. The Attorney General, the Governor, are all Democrats, and they're all women. So,
but that sounds progressive out there.
It does. And as far as being trans, I think I'm probably in the best place, the best state. Being here in Eastern Oregon, I'm a little bit scared of the Yahoos and the Yip-Yars. But, yeah, Oregon's a good place to live. And in spite of all of our history of racism, there's some damn good people here. And we're hoping that these ICE raids that they're talking about, maybe I'll call you later on this week, don't materialize.
I hope they don't. Well, Clarity, you have yourself a good evening.
You too, Bob. Keep up the good work, brother.
Trying. Bye now.
Bye.
The one and only Clarity calling from the fur reaches of Eastern Oregon. Out there with the, what was that? The Yip-Yars? Your Yip-Yes? Yep, right. A bunch of email rolling in. Subject line, Ted. Keith says, what was he generally soliciting? I think at this point it becomes abundantly clear, don't you? Michael and Madison with an idea. Maybe Harvey was a preemptive strike against Texas by God, because Ted Cruz was going to tweet out some porn. Just a little... Ted frustrated the will of the Almighty. Robert, in Australia, we can't have a government takeover of healthcare because private corporations do it so well. or so poorly, depending on how you look at things. And apparently, they're drawn to it. They're drawn to porn, the holier than thous. Robert points out, when the Festival of Light member of New South Wales Parliament was caught watching porn, it was explained as doing research. Hundreds of hours of research. Research. Yeah, figuring out how the heathens lived, right? Exactly. Let's see. Gwen with a note. Superfund. I would imagine that every one of those Superfund sites is simply littered with wells that are used to sample groundwater. The water is meant to come up out of the well. With all the water going down into those wells, it's overcharging sites that may be capped. Not a good thing. Oh, there's a whole bunch of not good things happening there. There are capped acid ponds, and I don't mean the good stuff. And I don't even necessarily mean the bad stuff like the brown acid. I mean, bad acid. All kinds of nasty poisons. Shoot, there was a recent story out of Arkansas. You know, we don't think about all, and it involved Georgia Pacific and people getting sick as a result of the toxins associated with the paper milling process. And by the way, Earther, wait, doesn't Ted Cruz sound like a porn moniker? Well, yeah, a little bit. Rafaelito Cruz. Rico Suave. Hey, yeah. By the way, we have heard from Steve from Georgistan. He let me know a little bit ago that he's okay. Subject line, Murphy's Law. Here I sat at a Holiday Inn. Miss Karen calls me and says, Steve, the lights are on. So I'm going back home because, like Dorothy said, there's no place like it. Unfortunately, I'll miss the horn tonight, but I should be back tomorrow. Well, we have missed you. We have missed you, Steve. I'm glad the lights are back on. By the way, future note for clarity, courtesy of Asa, don't bring up Tailpipe and Ted Cruz in the same call anymore, please. Clarity. Yeah, okay. That's true. I thought of it when we were talking about it. Ron reminded me earlier, don't forget our friends on Rapa Nui, Easter Island. Deforestation has been the downfall of many, many cultures. In regard to Mr. Ali and Mrs. Ali and their 15-year-old daughter out in Wichita, Steve on the Gulf Coast writes, so now at subject line, piggy bank pigs. So nowadays, if you aren't the right color, the bankers throw your whole family in jail instead of tripping all over themselves to get you interested in tying the money up in other financial products. Now, I don't know what kind of rinky-dink bank this poor guy was dealing with, but my bank, Wells Fargo, is going to at least drag you over to the customer service desk and chat it up for a few minutes and maybe sign you up for a few extra accounts you never even asked for. Yeah, well, those folks at M-Prize Bank there in Wichita, they've got a thing or two to learn. Yeah. Let's see. By the way, Glenn, by way of expertise, Glenn lets us know, I'm a geologist. And I've been referred to as a rock licker. I thought the reason was because we actually do lick or spit on the rock because the only way to identify a rock is when it's wet. Well, there is that, but no, these are. I think that's generally referred to because even your ExxonMobil geologist will lick the occasional rock. But no, this is just another. Another demeaning term for someone who thinks that the planet doesn't exist solely to provide profits for people like Bob Murray. And, you know, so that he can then purchase his very own administrator of the EPA and someone like Oh, Scott Pruitt. Yeah. Oh, dear God. That's true. Michael in Madison points out, Bob, Ted Cruz had WMD. Weapons of mass, WM, oh, that'd be WMB, weapons of masturbation. God knew, and he tried to take him out before he could use them. Well, now, let's remember, friends, that I don't consume alcohol or do drugs anymore, so when you give me images like that, just note that you're handing me a big old brain full of nightmares, okay? We need to be cognizant of that. And thank you very kindly to Brian for helping us take down the fundraising goal by another $25. Thank you, Brian. Thank you very, very kindly. Let's see. We're actually very close to knocking out the entire goal, but we haven't quite gotten there yet. We're down by about $100 or so, but somewhere around $7,500 to be completely caught up. Thank you, Brian. Thank you very kindly. Jack in Shreveport, subject line: cruising for porn. Oh, damn it! You're gonna hurt my cowbell hand if this keeps up. Nobody goes into the gutter like the Horn family goes into the gutter, though. I mean, I got respect. Respect must be paid. Cruz blames the like on his bad staff member. I'm telling you, the goddess of irony has him by that weird little pointy little waxy little nose, and she's just leading him around. Okay, and I'm going over to the phones again in a minute. Note coming out on tech stuff. Dave in Maryland with a note. Ditch Skype. There are working alternatives to the app Microsoft ruined named Skype. Google Hangouts is by far the best replacement for Skype. If you have a Gmail account, you have a Hangout app to use. There's also Discord if Google isn't ideologically pure enough. We need to hear angry. And I agree. He was using a beta, and it's apparently proving itself to still be in beta. And sadly, they don't do nearly as much as they should to update Linux systems as they do Apple and Windows-based ones. Dave adds, incidentally, if I had any money, I'd buy you a decent condenser microphone. Oh, well, it's not a condenser microphone I need. Typically, in broadcast settings, one uses a dynamic mic, and this one was a dandy, you know, for 12 years. And mainly it's that and the voice processor at this point in time. They wear out, especially the voice processor thing. That's the nice thing about a dynamic mic. There's not that much to go south. Although Neumann makes a damn fine condenser broadcast mic. But they've also, for the first time, introduced a beautiful dynamic broadcast mic that's gotten very, very good reviews. Well, let's wander over to what I presume is actually South Florida and see if Scary Jerry is with us. Are you there, man?
Hey, I'm calling you from Irmaville, from 25.9.
Oh,
that's,
yeah?
That's my latitude right now. Yeah, you learn the latitudes when a hurricane's coming through.
I can well imagine.
Exactly where you are and where where it is. This is my 22nd hurricane.
Wow.
Is it? Yeah. And the third one that struck. The third one that I say struck hard. I didn't count Katrina because Katrina formed over us. And that kind of turned in. That was a tropical storm turning into a hurricane, which I actually rode a bike in that. It went down the Keys and went into the Gulf and turned into something else. But, no, this, wow. I could talk about this for hours, Bob.
Well, you got 10 minutes, Jerry. I mean, yeah.
Wow. Well, you know, the
was it impressive?
The most important? It was scary as fuck, Bob. a little tornado came over my house.
Jeez.
It lived up to the hype. Very few things in life live up to the hype. There's parts, I got power back in like four hours ago. I downloaded your show from yesterday at like a functioning cell tower, and I used that to clean the house today. In the 90-degree no AC part. God bless the AC guy.
Oh, that's, yeah.
But I'm grateful. I'm happy. I do want to point something out to people going, well, we can't talk about this like climate. I've been tracking storms since I was a little kid, and Hurricane Bella. They fascinate and frighten the hell out of me. I've been tracking this one obsessively. Especially, when it had gusts at 224, it was like, damn. What people don't understand about a Category 5 is it's a civilization ender. It'll rip up the roads.
Yeah, it'll peel asphalt off of roadbeds, right?
Yeah. This wasn't that. This wasn't Andrew, which was my first storm, which they lied about how hard it hit. For the insurance purposes, because every category grade is exponential. That was a 220-mile, 250-mile storm. And anybody's been through that and goes through one of these new ones, they'll go, yeah, that thing was going, that was cranking. This, there was, hey, how about this for your horny nieces? I think weather control is real. They beat the hell out of Cuba to keep that away from us. That was weird. There was no reason it should have hugged Cuba so tightly. But it did. And then finally when it got to the Keys chain, off you go. But hey, thank those guys too. Go team. Go USA. Maybe that's the type of thing we have to do. That's what I wanted to bring up. It was a Category 5, Irma, longer than it was a tropical storm. We don't see Category 1s and Category 2s anymore. It goes tropical storm, boom, Category 5.
Well, I guess Jose's wandering around out there at Cat 1 now, but what, it could conceivably gin back up? No, well, I think I do.
Storms don't wander around and build up. You see 40 miles an hour, and then you see 120 miles an hour the next time they take a reading. Climate change is not going to take 50 years. It might take a night. That's all. During one of the bands, I saw 3 feet of rain in 1 minute. That was spectacular. I am so glad you're there, Bob. So glad to have power. We got to do something.
Well, we do, and unfortunately, you're down there, and you've got a governor who's forbidden the use of the words climate change and sea level rise. You know, what do you do?
I don't know.
No, I mean when you get down among the mayors in South Florida, no, they say climate change and they say sea level rise, because as you just noted, it's existential at that point.
A lot of the people running shit today have never seen anything like this. That's the other part, talking to your neighbors because your cell phone won't work. That was nice. Passing along news, asking how people were doing. That's one of the cool things about hurricanes. You got to talk to your neighbors. I'm trying to find some ice currently right now because ice, as you can imagine, has been a precious commodity.
Have you seen much direct evidence of gouging or anything?
I will tell you this. Buy your cigarettes beforehand and your rolling papers. Wow. The funny thing you pick up on, yeah, cigarettes were going for like $10 a pack. They're normally five or six. No gouging because I'm in a cool. I got a shout out to the cool community of Hollandale, where you'll go with these people again, so you can't really screw a guy. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
Go to a store and go. You know.
Well, if you don't mind, let me ask you this. It did sort of look like. As compared between the Texas Gulf Coast and South Florida, and, you know, the West Coast of Florida, for that matter, it looked like Florida has a better handle on being structurally prepared than Texas did. Am I right or am I wrong?
It's, well, yeah, we're kind of built for it because you got the old guys who see the hurricane in 1924, or can tell you about Donna or Andrew. And every 30 years, you see a, we don't give a shit about anything in Florida, mostly but hurricanes. And if you do a job, for instance, and your roof comes off, they'll come and find you. And they'll prosecute you. So, you know, hurricanes are the great quiz, as it were, to see what kind of workmanship and whatever, and you know, it's a $1 trillion coast. That's the other thing. There's three construction cranes that flew off, and those guys are going to go out of business because they, you know, imagine a construction crane flying around at 110 miles.
Oh, I saw some of the footage of at least one of them, and of course they left them unmoored, thinking that they would at least spin like what weather vanes, but. You're kind of stuck in that situation, aren't you? I mean, how do you engineer a 30-story crane to stand up in 120-mile-an-hour winds?
They had a week to take it down.
True.
So many realizations, like how some cities are well managed, and some cities adjacent are shit shows. Some blocks have power, some don't. And this was. Just a really angry tropical storm. This wasn't even well, I got a Category 1, Category 2 action here. But you get something like a true Cat 5, like it was when it was out by Barbuda.
Yeah, when it was scrubbing Barbuda flat, yeah.
We're fucked. There's nothing you can do. And the whole, hey, let's give out another tax cut and let's not build infrastructure. I mean, when you're sitting there with no dark, you're going, hey, how do I build a power pack grid? So I, you know, let's say it is a Category 5 and I'm safe and there's not going to be power for months. How do I keep it going personally? That's what you think of. Things like that, like how the whole grid needs to be distributed. Block by block, maybe.
Well, that's another question, and you may have the answer. If you don't, it's okay. I know you've got nuclear power plants. Where are they relative to the storm surges? You know, those things, that's a factor that matters.
Relative, I'm about 50 miles away to the south. It's 50 miles to the south of me. And they shut down 2 days before because they get fucked up every time. It's like the storms go right to them. Actually, these storms seem to attack power sources. I'm not shitting you. It's weird. The tornadoes will attack transformers, things of that. Back in the old days, we used to turn the whole power grid off. Right now, we keep it going right to the bitter end, which causes fires and all kinds of crap. But I will say this. It's awesome to do a storm in a first world nation.
Barbuda, Jesus Christ.
St. Martin,
you know, yes, I got a sick little bit of joy out of the idea that the mansion Trump was trying to sell at fire sale prices of $16.9 million. Of course, the damn thing probably wasn't worth $5 million, and he'll file an insurance claim for $30 million. I'm ashamed, but I was like, yeah, flatten that fucker. But it took a lot of decent people's lives with it.
How about Richard Branson, who said I was going to ride it out? That's the dumbest motherfucker. He should have won more on Monday yesterday. Really, he should have. And I made this joke, and everybody got it. He has the money. He could have gotten a Harrier jet there and then helicoptered everybody else away. But brains and money aren't the same thing, are they?
Not by a long shot. If we don't figure that out sometime soon, we really are screwed.
What he sat out was going 200 miles an hour. He had to know it was going. And he said, there's no amount of money because I've done an Andrew at 140, 150 with gust to 200. Not at the eye, about 40 miles from the eye. There's no amount of money. Just the sound alone, Bob. Just the sound. And you'll hear people talk about hurricanes and tornadoes very viscerally. They'll go, that sound though.
Oh no! I've got family that has ridden them out and said the sound of it just going on for 8, 10, 12 hours will drive you nuts.
Yeah,
because you just get to this point where you feel like it's never going to end.
It's also great to be in the 21st century. Like there's the Miami storm. Killed everybody because everybody went outside during that because they'd never seen a storm before. They're like, hey, it's over. Let's go outside. Everybody died.
Because of what came after.
Yeah. Or when we still had TV was telling people who hadn't seen a storm, hey, it's coming down right now, but there's a band coming through and it's traveling about 100 miles an hour. You need to go, you know. Because there's breaks.
Well, okay, so let me ask you this: you've got a unique perspective on this. What's your feeling on sticking reporters out in the middle of a hurricane, so that the rest of us can watch it happen to them?
It is mesmerizing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. No, I was completely junked on it all weekend. I confess.
It's disaster porn, is what it is.
Yeah,
and then we're all addicted to it because you know you feel if you're watching it, it ain't happening to you. And there's something very funny about the human, you know, it's like watching.
No, we're all everybody's sitting there going, you know, there, but for the grace of God goes John Smith, right?
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. I mean, it's hell. Look at the Irma trending on Twitter. I got. To yell in the air at some millennials and go, hey, you got your disaster porn now. You won't be able to update it on Facebook. They were so shocked. They're like, my cell phone doesn't work.
But I mean, we've got little fiber optic cameras that we stick in human beings and take pictures with. We couldn't do that. And just, I mean, because I don't want to see some reporter get their head sliced off by a goddamn rogue stop sign.
Did you see the guy who was out there in a $120 in the blue? Was wearing the blue. He had a blue over thing, a blue raincoat.
Yeah.
That guy. Yeah. What was wrong with that guy? They had a couple of reporters do that. Andrew, who never. Well,
I mean, do you get extra money
from again?
Is there extra money changing hands for being willing to do that?
No, it's that you've worked at a radio station before. It's bottom of the totem pole stuff.
See, I thought it was. I figured it was probably.
It's a hierarchy, yes.
You know, I thought it was probably you know Top Gun kind of, you know, I'm you know machismo. I'm going to stand up to the hurricane kind of bullshit.
No,
I mean,
the
story I remember best comes from Bush War One, when Bernie Shaw was under the table wetting himself. And meanwhile, there was this grizzled old reporter, what was his name, Richard something, Blystone, I think. And he was standing on a roof in Tel Aviv, and whoever was back in the studio said, Richard, you'd better get inside. And he just looked at the camera and said, I've been through a lot of these things, Bill. You know what? If Saddam's got a scud with my name on it, being inside is not going to make any difference. I'd rather be here reporting for CNN and for the world, so I'll be fine.
It's a mindset, man. I remember Hurricane Francis, which was 80 miles an hour, but it was moving 2 miles an hour, which is a problem. And I'm sitting out by Pompano Beach, Atlantic Ocean side, and it's about 2 hours away, and it's staring up. The water looks green and electric, and it looks like a French fries, Ryan. It's just agitated. The oil and French fries. And the green part is really weird. You see weird colors in a hurricane. So I look to the guy standing beside me. You know we're crazy for being here, right? And he goes, no, we're not. Look at the guy on the windsurf. He was about to go windsurfing in it. And then the windsurfing guy goes, no, I'm not crazy. Look at the body surf. German guy, because he's wearing German colors. That's why it stuck out. About to go out on a surfboard. And we all nod and go, yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. So it's a mindset. It's the reason why I didn't leave.
Yeah, I'm not crazy. That guy's nuts. I'm just standing here watching.
Yeah,
look at that dude 200 yards out on the flats. That fucker's fly fishing. You know, right. No, I recognize the attitude. But I guess, so do you file this under we dodged one?
Oh, big time. Dodged one. Everybody who was burning incense, rubbing rabbit's foot, killing chickens, laying down cart, whatever you did, it worked. Yeah.
Because I saw there was a group of people who were praying the hurricane away from Jacksonville. They didn't work.
I haven't seen pictures of that.
What was it?
That is spotty.
Pasco County, where the sheriff had to tell people, no, don't go out and shoot at the hurricane.
Yeah.
And then there was another group of people who turned on their fans, you know, like their little desktop fans, and set them out on the roof to blow the hurricane away.
Well, there was a guy who kept lighting blunts, and he would go out, and he says he's trying to calm it down, and he would blow the smoke in the wind. I give that guy some props. Neighbor of mine.
Yeah, well, you know, far be it from,
I lay it on him.
As long as it wasn't wasted, you know.
Hey, that's the other thing. Wow. Don't want to do any natural disaster without any kind of weed or alcohol. Even if you don't partake, it's currency, man. It really is.
Well, that's true. That's true. And, you know, warm beer, I suppose, is better than no beer.
Yeah. Wow. We just put some soda in the freezer, and we're just sitting there counting the moments because you still can't get ice. But, hey, first world problems, man. Spotty internet and no cable. First world problem. 2 days after.
And it may be a little while longer getting back to anything resembling not even normal but bearable, I guess, down in the Keys, right?
Keys are fucked up. Keys are fucked up. I don't know if they'll be able to do Fantasy Fest this year, which is a big deal for them. And I used to live in Marathon, where part of the eye clipped. There's no... everything down there is Cat 5, maybe, but, you know, when it comes down to it, nothing's Cat 5.
Well, it was 120 miles an hour passing Big Pine Key.
Yeah, but then you got your gusts.
Yeah.
That'll go 30 miles above that. But there's no... It's water on both sides, and it's a foot... Everything's a foot tall. And Big Pine Key doesn't have much there anyway. I mean, there's some places where grass is supposed to grow, and that's it. I guess that's the takeaway here.
Jesus. Well, from the other side of the world, just to give you an idea, Robert in Australia tells me, welcome to spring in Sydney, where it's 30 degrees Celsius, 86 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wow.
I just checked the temperature here in Sydney, 30 degrees Celsius, 86 Fahrenheit. We're 13 days into spring, which runs from the 1st of September to the 31st of November, and it's 86. It could be a long, hot summer.
Everywhere. It seems to really picked up in the last 5 years, too, specifically.
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does.
That exponential thing they talk about. And, The biggest complaint when they were going, hey, there's no Category 6, I think, yes, there is. I think there is now. I really do.
Well, you know, there's a Cat 6 when there becomes a need for a Cat 6.
That's where we're at.
When the scale was developed, Cat 5s were like, you know, once in a blue moon.
This storm was doing theoretical things. And just say that it was a Category 5 longer than it was anything else. I think that that's the thing that, you know, and we're not talking just weak-ass 155, 160. We're talking 180, 190. I was chilling pressure drops. I was like, oh, shit. Well, it's only 920 now. That's only utter destruction. But it was trying to do 912. You know what 912 does when you hit? Those are those historic storms that break everything.
Yeah, like the one that destroyed the railroad, what, 1934?
Yeah, that was 914, I think. That was the one where they got on a plane and they started dumping leaflets going. There's a monument in Isla Morada. I don't know if that's there. It's about 12 feet tall. And it goes, hey, the water was on the top of this, and your way to live was to hang onto a palm tree. Literally like a cartoon. That was it.
Jesus. Well, I'm awful glad
you... That was almost 100 years ago.
I'm awfully glad you called in. I really, really am. And I've, you know, burned up a little extra time. Not burned it up, not wasted it. But I'm glad people got a chance to hear something firsthand from down there, because one of the more disturbing notions that I've seen coming out of this is that somehow, because it wasn't a Cat 5 that just knocked the living shit out of Miami, that somehow or another, everything's okay. Everything ain't okay.
No, everyone knows that we dodged something. Because in every hurricane, there's a little bit of its history. You can hear the tropical storm winds from when it was a tropical storm. You can hear all the ranges it went through. And there were Category 5 moments in this for like 15 seconds, you know. And then everything would calm down and we even get blue sky. And every, you know, when your neighbors would poke their heads out, they'd be like, what the fuck? And you'd have that same look on your face too. And you're going, yeah, that's Cat 5. You do that for 4 hours, everything ends. Because nothing can withstand.
And the pressures build up.
Know.
And oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Happy to be alive. Happy to be calling him, Bob.
Man, I'm happy. I'm happy that you did, and I'm happy that you are. And let's talk again soon. You hear?
Actually, Bob, I called you before I called some family members. I'm a little embarrassed admitting that, but you're like family.
Well, you may be embarrassed, but on behalf of the Horn Family Community Congregation, I'm honored and humbled. And I'm glad you did check in.
Oh, this is a bad Star Trek. And Star Trek's on. That's how you know civilization's back. Love you guys. Thank you, Bob.
All right. We'll see you, Jerry. Bye.
Take care.
And calling from, you heard where he was calling from. South Florida, 25-9. That's Scary Jerry. Time to get out of here. I have run 12 minutes over. I apologize for stepping on any toes, but moments like that, you don't just cancel out of them. So, and by the way, a little note coming from James. It wouldn't take a crew of 7 an hour to lay a crane down and lash it to the leeward side of a building. I'll be damned. Even those like 30-story affairs. Wow. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of you who have contributed tonight to help dig us out of the hole. We're almost out of it. Maybe we'll get out of it tonight with the aid of the overnight crew, the subscribers. I'll let you know tomorrow for prayer meeting Wednesday. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to all of you who share your precious time listening to the program, however you listen. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. And thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, It's all for you. Good night, y'all.